This episode of the Coin Spice podcast is brought to you by Cash Shuffle, because what you do with your money is your business. To give this new product a try for fungibility and privacy, head on over to electroncash.org, download their latest wallet 4.0.0, and give it a spin. CashShuffle.com for more information, because what you do with your money is your business.
What is really going on, crypto savages? You are listening to the Coin Spice podcast with host C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief at coinspice.io, your home for spicy crypto things on the net.
What is really going on, crypto savages? This is your host, C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief out at coinspice.io, back with another episode of the Coin Spice podcast, and wow, do I have a guest for you this time around. It's Yonald Fuchball. He is the enigmatic developer, essayist, thought leader, investor, business person, and I know he gets embarrassed when I call him this, but he's also a historic figure. Really, how many people can say they participated actively and were instigators of the most successful fork of the world's first cryptocurrency, and I'm of course calling and recalling Bitcoin Cash relative to the old gray lady, Bitcoin Core, BTC. Fuchball is one of these guys that does not put himself out there in terms of public appearances and giving interviews a whole lot. So to grab him was certainly a treat, and to be able to talk to him, flesh him out a bit, kind of round him out a bit in terms of getting a sense of who he is and why he does what he does, I think is very, very, very important. I do take him back through his initial involvement, all through where we are today, and then we pivot into the future. I get his opinions, of course, along the way on different controversies, and I think you're really going to enjoy it, whether you're an investor, whether you're just someone who's interested in peer-to-peer cash, or you just kind of want to learn more about the history of cryptocurrency. This particular episode goes a long way in helping all of that. So without any further ado, I give you Yonald Fuchball.
Thank you so much for all the work you've done, all the time and effort and sweat, being out there in the public, the battles, the fights, to bring peer-to-peer cash alive and to in some cases help it thrive. So I wanted to get that out of the way, do my fanboy thing. And
wow, thank you. Nice to hear that, actually, because a lot of times we just kind of work, us that are working in crypto, working behind the scenes, and we don't get to be appreciated as much as maybe we should be. So
yeah, I totally agree with that, and that's part of the series, part of doing this and documenting you guys. So super, super appreciated. I know a little bit because, again, I am a fan of your work and especially of your writings. I kind of know your history just being a fan. But for folks that maybe aren't familiar with your journey to becoming a developer of note, take us back to the time of 2013, right? So we're in the second Obama administration, 4 years from the roughly from the Genesis block. How do you discover Bitcoin? What are you doing then, and what impressions does it immediately leave on you?
Yeah, so I remember hanging out with a friend of mine. I think we were on a business trip or something, in a hotel or something. And he said, "Hey, have you heard of Bitcoin?" I think we were talking about like payment methods, different ways that our businesses could deal with things, credit card and PayPal. And he said, "Hey, have you heard of Bitcoin?" And I think I had seen it on some checkout page, but I had assumed that it was just another centralized system or whatever. And, I said, I think I've heard of that. And, my friend was all excited. He's like, dude, this is this is like you know, there's no chargebacks, and it's this thing where, like, you know, it just arrives instantly and everyone knows it. I'm like, what? This is crazy. So I started looking into it, and reading the white paper was a kind of a surreal experience, because you're, at least for me when I was reading it, it's like, wow, this is like, you know, it's so new that it's hard to know how much of it you really understand. I don't know if you can relate to what I'm saying, but.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if I fully get this, but it seems like amazing. Like, there's these, you know, miners, or, you know, there's this competition, and it's this beautiful incentive system. So I was pretty excited about it. And I just had the feeling like this could be really, really big. And it's kind of one of those things, like people say, well, it's a humanitarian project that's disguised as a get rich quick scheme. So I always like that aspect of Bitcoin, that it was sort of a win-win with the people that invest in it. Can profit while at the same time are growing this new network that can help change the world for the better.
So do you have any, because I remember something about you having been an entrepreneur or a businessman during that time. So you were kind of, you know, doing your own thing in terms of the hustle, right?
Yeah. I mean, I won't go into exactly what kind of businesses, yeah, I've been self-employed since, like, you know, 2004 or so. Before that, I was a software developer. I've gotten so far out of the software thing when I started, being an entrepreneur, that I sort of feel like I lost a lot of my programming chops. But I still kind of have that background, so that's part of the reason why I was able to, you know, understand as much as I can about different Bitcoin things, and, you know, it kind of having some technical background definitely helped me to contribute to Bitcoin and, you know, the software side of things.
And your worldview generally, you know, we tend to be, not in every case for sure, but we tend to be kind of cranky libertarian types, maybe former gold bugs, these sorts of things. Because to me, the software background and the entrepreneurial side, that's just a perfect storm for Bitcoin. But did you also have that crankier, you know, monetary idea, or no?
Yeah, I you know, I've been a registered libertarian for as long as I was, you know, of voting age. So.
Oh, wow.
I guess a perfect storm, all the ingredients, right?
For sure.
So, yeah, and it was I don't know if I was cranky. I guess I kind of was, in the sense, like, when I was – Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just laughing.
When I was a younger man, you know, just coming out of college, or, you know, even when I was in college, I would proselytize and try to convince people about how, you know, how bad the system is, and the government, and, you know, the parasitical nature of politicians and bureaucracies. And I pretty much got nothing but hate and ridicule for trying to toe that line. So at some point, I just kind of gave up trying to convince people. I just kind of accepted that, hey, the world is pretty messed up. It's not likely to change. And I'm just going to, you know, do as well for myself as I can within this crazy world. But then when Bitcoin came along, it was like, holy crap, this is something that actually could – you know, make a change, you know, have an impact. I think the internet's had an impact as well in general, you know, but Bitcoin is maybe even more of a paradigm shift.
Yeah, it really is one of those revelatory experiences, and I don't have the technical chops, and I remember attempting to read the white paper, and it might have you know, just been written in French or Swahili, but parts of it for me stood out, and they jumped out to me. And then people like yourself, who had, you know, somewhat of a technical background and could, you know, sort of divine what was being said and some of the problems that it potentially solved. It really did. It was one of those, this is really, you know, I'm putting a lot on it, but I really kind of saw it at least initially, and I still kind of cling to this, but as almost a hinge of history, that you can kind of see, you know, a pre-Bitcoin world and a post-Bitcoin world. So it definitely hit me hard as well, because we have similar backgrounds in terms of worldview. So yeah, very, very cool. And then that leads you to get involved in Bitcoin, what we would now call Bitcoin Core or BTC, and you become a somewhat prominent figure during the 2017 fork, August of that year. I know the answer, but what about Bitcoin Cash, what would become Bitcoin Cash, drew you to it, and why didn't you stay with, conversely, Bitcoin Core?
Yeah, so I had been pretty active on the BitcoinTalk.org Bitcoin forum, which was pretty much the Bitcoin forum. and you had, I'm not sure if people listening to this, I'll have different knowledge of the whole history of events. But there was this huge scaling debate, which pretty much started in 2013, when you had people like Peter Todd and Greg Maxwell basically saying that we need to keep the block small. We'll have problems. It won't be decentralized anymore. We should try to do these second layers and
sidechains. And just to interrupt, that's a really good point that I think gets glossed over too much, is that that debate actually went on for a solid 4 years, right? The debate that you're now talking about.
Right. Yeah. So, and at the time in 2013, I don't think a lot of people realized or believed that we would really just stay at 1 megabyte. That was sort of unheard of. And then over time, the Overton window got moved. If you're not familiar with that concept, it's just kind of a concept about how things go from being unacceptable to maybe, well, we can debate it, to being kind of middle of the road, and then it just, opinion goes from one side to the other. And then combined with like the censorship, like that Bitcoin talk, there was this client called XT that came out that Mike Hearn published. And it was basically like, well, we increase the block size, but only if 75% of the network's running it. But even discussing that was like banned on our big, or it was moved to the altcoin section so people really wouldn't see it or whatever. And so they controlled this whole narrative that we need to like keep the blocks at 1 megabyte. And eventually, the community forked off because it just wasn't, we were hoping not to split and we can, increase the blocks on the BTC network. And that didn't happen. There was many attempts. There was the Hong Kong agreement where a bunch of miners and core developers got together. And I think if my memory serves correct, I think Adam Back agreed, and then Greg Maxwell called him a dipshit online, said you can't agree to that. And then after that, there was the New York agreement with the SegWit2x, where they said, okay, well, we'll do a hard fork later to 2 megabytes if everyone accepts SegWit first. And most of us recognize that this was kind of a bait and switch. They had no intention of giving them, the 2 megabyte hard fork. And it didn't really have support anyway, because by that time, Bitcoin Cash had already forked off. And so, people from the big block side and also the small block side didn't want SegWit2x, so that failed. But anyway, so, it just ended up being Bitcoin Cash. And so, yeah, the whole point is that you can't scale a global cash system with 1 megabyte blocks. It's pretty simple. So they, the BTC camp has their roadmap, which is pretty much turned into the Lightning Network.
Yeah.
But there's a ton of problems with the Lightning Network. I mean, don't get me started.
that's a whole other topic, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem with the Lightning Network, in my opinion, is the liquidity. You just can't – there's no real way to have everyone making payments that they want to make without splitting – I mean, it's like you have to end up splitting your funds into a bunch of different channels, and it's just a mess, so it just doesn't work.
Right.
I actually tried to, like, figure out how it could work,
uh-huh.
you know, and then I ended up deciding it can't work. And then I wrote that article about, you know, like a mathematical proof why the Lightning can't scale unless you have big centralized hubs.
Yeah, those Medium posts are gold, and they're definitely required reading. But when you say scale, when we use words like scale, I'm always wary that you know, newer people who are listening, you know, kind of hear that word a million times, and it sort of becomes rote. But when we say scale, what essentially we're talking about is adoption, that if a bunch of people were to rush in and begin using this, merchants or, you know, however you want to interpret what adoption means, where the network is actually, you know, employed through a large number of people and use cases, there's a very good chance, as we saw in the run-up in late 2017, ironically, right after the fork, relatively speaking, where you see a bunch of people rushing to, you know, make use of it, only to find that it's slow, clunky, and expensive. Am I kind of putting a better spin on what scale means?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm not like trying to make this into a let's bash Lightning. I mean, those guys could, you know, do their little tinkering of Lightning all day long. But I guess what I mean is that, sure, like some people will say, well, Lightning works. I just made a Lightning payment. Okay, it like works for, you know, if you in these little specific cases, but it's not a replacement for Bitcoin. It's not a replacement, or not a good one anyway, for just using the system and being able to send money. You know, I'll quote Roger Ver. He says, you know, I can send money to anyone, anywhere in the world, almost for free. So I think that kind of sums up what Bitcoin's really all about.
Yeah, and that takes us then through Bitcoin Cash is the successful as far as I think most people in the, if they were being honest would say is really the only successful fork of Bitcoin BTC, and it becomes a something that people get excited about, and you're one of a handful of people to have participated in this. It's pushing forward. There's adoption. Always debate, but you know, there's kind of a momentum going. The market, let's say, bubbles, the speculative market bubbles, bursts, and you know, prices come down a little bit more to sanity. And then there's another debate inside of Bitcoin Cash that turns kind of ugly.
Hey, crypto savages, this is C. Edward Kelso breaking in with a quick and very shameless plug. CoinSpice.io is a feisty pirate ship. We depend to rely on almost entirely organic growth, which means our audience really does the marketing for us, and there's nothing more powerful than word of mouth. If you read an article you like on CoinSpice.io, if you listen to a podcast and you enjoy the content, or if you're just pissed, please promote us on social media, wherever you're at, wherever that is, whether it's Reddit, whether it's YouTube, the Telegram, you know, you name it, the Twitter, like us, retweet, all that great stuff. You can always find detailed show notes for every podcast on the corresponding page at coinspice.io. There you'll find links to our respective podcast, your favorite platform like iTunes. Please give us a rating. Please give us a subscribe. You know all that good stuff. It helps the pirate ship remain afloat. It keeps us going. We appreciate it. As always, you can contact me personally if you have questions, concerns, you want to hear from a particular guest, you have a news tip at Kelso, K-E-L-S as in Sam, O, at coinspice.io. Thanks again for listening. We sure do appreciate it. And back to the episode.
Results in a contentious hard fork, and an eventual split into another project. And during that time, a lot of us, especially on the media side who were documenting it, could sense the panic, could sense the frustration within the broader, on both sides of the Bitcoin Cash community about what this would mean. And not long after the fork, you posted kind of, I don't know how to frame it, but you basically laid out why divorce is maybe a good thing in this case, from people who very many considered toxic. Are you
talking about the November, the original fork of Bitcoin Cash in 2017?
Yeah, I'm talking about the most recent fork where, so we're a year and change into Bitcoin Cash, and there is a hash war.
So the
project splits again. We have Bitcoin Cash as the ticker. It moves on. Exchanges, you know, kind of acknowledge that more or less. And, you know, after it, both prices are just, you know, plummeting. Bitcoin Cash seems almost dead late 2018 in terms of, the speculative price. And I was really surprised by your Medium post, because right after that, you were like, wait a second. You know, everybody just calm down. This could be a good thing in the sense that it was, you know, making Bitcoin Cash clearer for some and then divorcing the community from toxic actors. But go ahead.
Let's be clear. It wasn't a good thing. I was trying to show the silver lining.
Okay.
The good aspect is that, you know, yeah, we're rid of the people that wanted to disrupt us and, you know, basically be either be the boss of Bitcoin Cash or burn it down or whatever. So, that wasn't a good thing, but I feel like we just got some vindication because BSV has now been delisted. It's like they just went too far. You know, what you reap, you sow. So all this bullying and stuff has really come back to bite those people. But not only that, it's really good for Bitcoin Cash because it's sort of – here's how I look at it. Like before the fork, the hash war, Bitcoin Cash was really like the peer-to-peer cash version of Bitcoin. And we had a ton of momentum. And then when the hash war happened, it's sort of like, okay, now there's like two versions of Bitcoin Cash. And so how do we know that you're even the right, you know, one? Or
right.
And it also kind of cast doubt on the whole forking. Like, you know, the BTC guys will say, well, you know, you're just going to keep forking, right? That's why we don't have hard forks in BTC. So it sort of lent a little bit of credence to their theory that, you know, right. Even I was starting to doubt, like, well, maybe there's something to that. And then, okay, now the whole delist BSV thing happens, and it's like, oh, okay. Well, now everyone recognizes, no, the community didn't split. It was just a bunch of assholes attacking us. And, you know, it's it really, you know, BCH was the truth the whole time. That's kind of like how I mean, that's my biased view. But I think that's sure. Going to play out in the longer or medium to long term that, yeah, it's still Bitcoin Cash. And that's, you know, we're still the OG Bitcoin. So.
Yeah, right. And so I was going to ask about the delisting idea. Any thought about the potential dangers there? I think your Medium post was sort of vindicated. Ironically, without any help from the Bitcoin Cash community that was supposedly so at odds with BSV,
right. It
BSV just kind of, or at least the people who claim to be representing it, just in a classic case of overplaying their hand, did so, and then a broader community that, again, it wasn't us, as far as I can see.
Yeah, you're right.
Sort of shut them down. It remains to be seen how it plays out, but do you think there's maybe a dangerous precedence with or precedent being set rather with the likes of the exchanges, or you kind of answered already, but what do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, yeah, no, first of all, I agree with you. It wasn't from the Bitcoin Cash people. And it kind of pisses me off that it was done for like the wrong reasons. Like there was this lawsuit against the ABC developers.
Right.
It was completely ridiculous. And I mean, unprecedented as far as like, okay, we're going to sue open source developers, but where's the outcry for that? No, we're going to be we're going to instead be outraged over suing this like random cat guy.
Exactly. And really, and in truth, to your point, they weren't even really suing him. They sent him a letter, right?
Right. Well, they did put a bounty to dox him, so that was not cool.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right.
So that was not cool. But there was, I mean, suing ABC, actually suing them is way more uncool. So sure. That kind of pisses me off a little bit. But yeah, as far as like delisting, I mean, it is a free market. So if you know, exchanges do have a lot of power. Does it set a bad precedent? Maybe a little bit. I don't think exchanges should be necessarily throwing their weight around like that, especially in such an unprincipled manner. Like, let's ignore the one lawsuit. But you know, I think in this case it's okay. I don't think it's. I think it's a good thing overall that they did that.
Yeah, and I like the fact that we can have the discussion inside of the community, at least on places like RBTC and elsewhere, where you know, we can all sort of say, well, yeah, you know, we might like the outcome, but what about the process, and go back and forth. And I think it's an important discussion to have as we, you know, whether we favor proof of work and miners, or we, you know, we champion the dev community, or all of the above, or the biz dev side, or the exchanges. It is interesting to see, you know, that balance of power, you know, who's calling balls and strikes. I'm trying to think of all the different metaphors here, come to fruition. And it seems to me, anytime someone goes too far in one direction, it's all about miners. That's it. That's all we need to be. Or it's all about devs. That's it. Or it's all about, you know, thought leaders. That's all we need to be. Or exchanges. It seems to me that the community, I don't know, shows its resilience in the sense that, you know, all these different heads can come and I guess countervail each other. I'm not sure what I'm trying to say. But anyway.
Yeah, no, a lot of these things are very nuanced and you know, multifaceted. So, yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of... Go ahead.
You know, there's some truth to what everyone's saying. There's some truth to what the core guys say. There's, you know, there's even some truth to what, you know, the BSV guys are saying in, you know, in a certain limited way. But, yeah, it's like not a simple cut and dried thing.
Well, cool. And I'm glad to hear you say that. And the reason that prompted me to get you on here, besides all the things that we've discussed thus far, is your latest comparison. You really do look at on Medium some of the other projects, and you compare them right now in real time, basically within the last couple of weeks, to Bitcoin Cash. And can you go into that a little bit, and why you chose, like, I know you chose to compare it to Dash, and I don't have it in front of me right now, and I'm sorry about that. But Dash.
Sure. So I just want to say up front that I'm not saying, like, this was a pretty one-sided article. You're talking about the Bitcoin Cash versus other top coins.
Yes.
And I purposely did not, like, discuss the negative points of Bitcoin Cash. And I'm not – there are some negative points of Bitcoin Cash. It's not, like, perfect. But, yeah, but I am – it obviously is a pro-BCH article. And the reason I'm pro-BCH is basically, you know, I want peer-to-peer electronic cash. That was – the kind of the promise of the original, you know, when I read the white paper, it talked about a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. And we know that BTC kind of screwed that up with the 1 megabyte limit, right? So I, you know, it doesn't, it's not like that, like, it has to be BCH, but BCH just happens to be the project that kind of fits the best. And there's also the network effect. So you could have a code base that is great, but if no one's using it, then it, you know, doesn't matter. I mean, Bitcoin Cash works today, but it's going to work better when there's more people using it because there's going to be higher proof of work and et cetera, right?
Right.
So, yeah, so I guess I chose for that article, I just pretty much looked at like the top 10 coins, like what else is, you know. So BTC, yeah, obviously you got the issue with the block size.
But let me phrase it. I should have asked a better question of you because then I'm, you know, for you to have to summarize the whole damn thing is not fair. But let me ask you this, because I asked this of Andreas Brecken a while back too. Which of those projects, those 10 that you selected, which one do you find the most intriguing? So let's take Bitcoin Cash out of it. The most interesting.
I think Monero is pretty interesting. Because it's really different. I mean, it's got the crypto note protocol. It's got like, you know, it's got these dark things. So it's definitely very different than Bitcoin. And it is pretty cool, like the privacy features. That being said, I don't really, I mean, I did use Monero, but it's so clunky to use that it's not even worth it, the hassle of it. Like just to pull your coins out of cold storage, you need like two full nodes, and then it's just, like they don't seem to care about the wallet or the user experience that much, so I don't see it going places. But I still think it's cool technology.
And I think that's a nice segue into a couple of your babies. One, of course, is the Lite wallet, the SPV wallet, Electron Cash, and more recently integrating the plugin Cash Shuffle. Which we've talked about a little bit here on the show the last couple of times, is Monero? What you just say kind of factor into your thinking along the lines of Electron Cash and forking Electrum? Does it eventually get there with things like Cash Shuffle? Seeing that there's like you personally even like. Or find interesting Monero, and you see that there's sort of a demand for something like that. Does that like naturally factor into your development of Electron Cash?
Well, I think people want privacy features. That's nothing new. But as far as like the user friendliness, it's sort of almost like the opposite of a Lightning Network. Like people. Some of the BTC trolls, when they see Cash Shuffle, will say, oh, well, that's just CoinJoin. That's, like, not innovating.
Right.
Okay, well, it's just CoinJoin, but it's very user-friendly, and it works. And it's going to, you know, versus the Lightning Network is, like, it's maybe very cool technology, but it's not user-friendly and it doesn't work. So what are you going to choose, the thing that's cool and doesn't work or the thing that's boring but works? So at the end of the day, it's all about what works, right?
And those trade-offs.
Privacy. I mean, Monero is pretty good, but we're gonna get there eventually with not just Cash Shuffle, but other tools like atomic swaps.
Right.
Mark Lunderberg was talking about there's a way that we can do like atomic swap scripts that you can't even tell it's an atomic swap, and we can layer these things together, and we can have. Different kinds of we can have atomic swaps with different SLP tokens. We can do all kinds of things, and then like kind of have a privacy ecosystem. So when you layer these different things together, it's going to be hard to track people's coins, and that's the whole point, right?
Right, and that gives it almost a cash-like feature in the real world, and maybe even better, right?
Yeah, I mean. the whole thing is to make the coins fungible. I mean, there's privacy and there's fungibility, which are two different things that are related. But if everyone's mixing their coins, then it gets very hard to blacklist coins because everyone's got some taint from everyone else's coins, right?
Right, right. It's a super interesting project, and we'll link to all these things in the show notes. So. I said I was going to keep you for half an hour, and I've already gone over that, and I know you're a terribly, terribly busy guy, so let's end on this then. What's your thought? What's the future look like? So you've been in the space now officially for something like 6 years. What do you see If you had a crystal ball here going forward for crypto, maybe generally, and Bitcoin Cash in particular?
I mean, that's so hard to say. It's interesting you asked that because I was watching a video the other day which had like a time-lapsed – someone posted this on Reddit. It's like a time-lapsed view of the top 10 coins. And so starting in 2013, you had these coins like Peercoin and Namecoin, which today are like down, you know, way down the list. They're not relevant anymore. So I'm pretty sure that the top 10 coins today are not going to be the top 10 coins 3 years from now. There probably will be, I mean, there's always like the, you know, the big winners that have the network effect. Up to now, that's been BTC. Hopefully in 3 years, it'll be BCH. But, you know, we don't know. So one thing is like in crypto, you got to expect the unexpected. It's just such a fast changing and radical landscape that we really don't know. We can't really imagine the future. But hopefully there'll be some form of peer-to-peer electronic cash. Hopefully that's Bitcoin Cash. That's getting more and more adoption. And we are seeing that now, which is really cool. Like just certain places, Tokyo and North Queensland, and as far as BCH in particular. And then I also hear there's a lot of adoption going on in Slovenia, places like that. So I think it starts in specific places, and that's kind of how you get adoption is kind of have this little hotbed of usage. So hopefully there'll be more of those little pockets that open up.
Yeah, and it's definitely interesting to see Bitcoin Cash and projects like it roll through all of these hits and just keep, you know, coming back, and how resilient, especially the development teams are within the project. So again, man, thank you for all that you're doing, for all that you've done. You know, this is a real interesting time for all of us. I owe at least, you know, a significant part of my career to people like yourself. So anytime I can have you on and just say thank you is certainly something I'll do. But beyond that, man, I'm rooting for you. I know a lot of us are, whether we're investors or, you know, enthusiasts or just, you know, plain old bag holders. We want to see you do well. Thank you again for coming on, man. And I wish you all the best.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on the show.